Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the first episode that I'm releasing on Truss. This is so exciting. I was going to try to do this in two episodes, but I think I'm going to break it down into three. And the one that you're listening to right now is the first of a series of episodes on Truss. And it's going to be what I call Truss 101. What is a trust? We're going to go real basic today and make sure everyone's on the same page. So the idea for this series of presentations came out of some speaking that I did in January to the ATAP conference in Toronto. And I did a series of presentations on trusts, speaking with the advisors there on some of the details and some of the issues arising out of the new trust reporting rules. And a lot of the feedback that I was receiving at that conference was that people were looking for some foundational information on trusts. And so I thought this might be a great way to approach it. In this episode, I plan to cover some very foundational topics. So what is a trust? What are the parties to a trust or the actors in a trust? The difference between, you know, a capital beneficiary and an income beneficiary, and how are trusts taxed? Because I think it's important to understand how a trust is taxed. And if you're listening to this, you may be someone that has a trust. You may have a family trust, or you might be an advisor perhaps that has clients who have trusts, either that they've created in their will or that they've created in lifetime. And so hopefully this will give you a good foundation of what to look for and some issues to kind of red flag for you on these documents. So what is a trust? So first, it's important to remember that trust law is provincial in nature. So, Canada divides up the ownership or the power with respect to certain laws as between the provinces and the federal government. And trust law falls under provincial law. And so what that means is each of the provinces and the territories have some piece of legislation that governs how trusts are dealt with in their particular province. And it's really important to be familiar with the laws in your province because things are different depending on where you are. And a trust is really just like a legal arrangement. There's no real better way to describe it. It's kind of like a contract or like a formalized relationship. And there is a person, which we call the settlor, that gives another person, which we call the trustee, stuff and gives that person the right to manage that stuff and to hold on to it for the benefit of somebody else, the beneficiary. And typically trusts, you think of them as either being something you create in lifetime, which we sometimes call an inter vivos or inter vivos trust, or it can be something that you create on death, which we often call a testamentary trust. Now, outside of the provincial rules or the provincial legislation that governs trust, you can't forget that trusts can also be taxed. So important, which means that the Federal Income Tax Act may also apply. And if you look at the Income Tax Act, you're going to see a whole bunch of stuff about trusts in there, a heck of a lot more now in light of some of these new rules. But it talks about, you know, what is a trust? It categorizes different types of trusts, indicates when trusts need to file tax returns, and how they are taxed. The definition of what constitutes a trust differs for the purposes of income tax versus sometimes the provincial law. And it's also important to remember that something that is a trust in Canada and the way it's taxed in Canada is very different than how a trust would be taxed in the United States or in a different country. And so just because something is a trust in one place doesn't mean it's going to look the same or be taxed the same in a different place. And that's really important to keep in mind when you're implementing a trust, or if you have a trust and you're wondering how it's going to be taxed or how it's going to be dealt with. Now, if you were taking a law school class on trusts, you would hear a reference to the three certainties. And so in order for a trust to be created, three things need to be present. There has to be a certainty of intention. So somebody has to actually intend to transfer stuff to a trustee to hold for the benefit of other people. There must also be a certainty of subject. So we must be able to identify what the stuff is that's being transferred in. And then third, there has to be a certainty of object. So we have to be able to identify who the people are that get to benefit from this stuff. And if we can't figure out one of those three things, then we may not have a trust at law. I find in the last, 6 to 7 months, maybe because of the introduction of these new trust reporting rules, I have lots of clients come in and see me, and they have these discretionary family trusts, these trusts that were created in lifetime, where somebody gifted a sum of money into a trust, and mom and dad are the trustees, they're running the show, and this trust is for the beneficiary of mom and dad and their kids and grandkids, maybe some other companies that mom and dad may own. And you know, the trust's been running for maybe 10 years or something. And so everyone's kind of forgotten, like, why did we put this trust in place to begin with? And so I'll have clients come in my office and say, you know, Amanda, I don't think I need this thing anymore. Like, why do I still have this trust? I think we should get rid of it. And when someone says that to me, I always take a step back and go, okay, whoa, let's start talking about the pros and cons of a trust. Because some of these things may apply to you. Before we start getting rid of this thing, we should really take a step back and figure out some of its purposes. Trusts can be used for many different reasons. One of the reasons we'll commonly use a trust is to provide for someone who's underage. So if you're under the age of 18, you can't hold property yourself. It has to go into trust for you. So we'll often see trusts for minors in people's wills. Or perhaps you have long-term dependencies and you can't manage your own property and someone else needs to look after it for you. That's another reason to have a trust. One of the other reasons, though, that people often forget about is one of the uses of a trust in lifetime. And a typical structure is that, you know, mom and dad may have a company, and that company operates a business. And a company or a corporation can have different types of shares, but one main way to categorize shares or like ownership in a private company is to determine if the shares are common or if they're preferred. Now, a common share doesn't mean it's like a boring everyday share. A common share is the type of share that grows in value or decreases in value depending on the value of the business. It can go up and it can go down. A preferred share, though, has a fixed rate. It's stuck. It's frozen. A preferred share has that value and it's not going up. When you die, you are immediately prior to your death deemed to sell everything you own. So if you happen to own shares in a private company, those shares are also going to be subject to this kind of annoying tax rule that happens immediately prior to your death. And what happens is you're deemed to sell this and then you're deemed to reacquire it at fair market value. And why does the government do this? Because if you never sell your shares to a third party, the government never gets to collect tax on those shares. So if you paid $20 for your shares and now your shares are worth $1 million, well, until you go and sell those shares to a third party, you're not going to be taxed on the growth or the increase in value in those shares unless you die. And then CRA pretends that you've sold them and then bought them back to capture that increase in value, and they will tax you on that on your death. So many people have set up a structure where instead of personally owning these common shares that go up and down with the value of the company, instead they let a trust own them, because a trust is not you. So you may be a trustee of a trust, but you don't own the stuff in the trust. You just have the right to control it and to follow the terms of the trust and distribute it to beneficiaries. So if I am a trustee of a trust and this trust owns some common shares in my company, if I die, there is no deemed disposition of the shares in the trust. There's no big tax bill that happens on my death. So it's a really cool way of deferring tax down the road. And that's often still a pretty valid reason to keep these trusts around. Now, there's many other uses for a trust that I can't get into today because we're doing a short episode, but that is one that you really have to keep in mind, especially if you're a business owner and you have a trust in place. So if you have a trust and you're listening to this and thinking, why do I have this trust? Ask the question the next time you're meeting with your advisor, and they can talk about your circumstances and the pros and the cons. So who are these parties or these actors in a trust, these words that we say and we describe people? There's a settlor, which is spelled S-E-T-T-L-O-R, a settlor. That person is the person who kind of kicks off the trust, who gets it started. And they will usually give either cash, or it used to be a gold coin or something to get the trust started. And so a very typical structure is that either a family friend or maybe a cousin or somebody will give, you know, five $20 bills to get things started. And then they'll give those bills to people called the trustees. Trustees are the people who manage the property of the trust, who distribute things to beneficiaries, who, you know, instruct accountants as to whether or not a tax return needs to be filed, those kinds of things. And the trustees may use one or more of these $20 bills to buy some shares. And they might buy some shares for a very low rate in a family company, for example. And that's what it's used for. And then now the trust has some settled property, some of this money that they originally got, plus now they own some shares. So that's the starting point of a trust. And then, of course, there are beneficiaries. And these are the people that get the benefit of the trust. And it's possible to be a trustee and a beneficiary. But you have to be pretty careful if you're a settlor. You can't also have one of those other categories of actor to be a trustee or a beneficiary without potentially tripping on some bad tax rules. So it's okay to be a trustee and a beneficiary, but if you're a settlor, you kind of want to limit your role to being a settlor. There are different types of beneficiaries. And so if you're looking at your trust deed, you might see a reference to a capital beneficiary or an income beneficiary. So an income beneficiary is entitled to the stuff that is accumulated off of the assets. So for example, if your trust owns an investment and the investment was originally worth $100,000, and each year that investment generates a dividend or generates income of another $100,000. Well, the income on that, that extra stuff that's generated, can go to income beneficiaries. Now, a capital beneficiary is entitled to the initial capital, that initial investment, that ability to take those initial shares or that initial investment, the initial stuff. That's what a capital beneficiary is entitled to. And you can be both, or one or the other. And it's important to know what you are. And it's important as a trustee to know the categorization of these two things as it impacts what you can actually do with the stuff in a trust. Usually, there is a document, sometimes called a trust deed or a trust agreement, that says who all these people are. It says who the settlor is. It says who the trustees are. It says who the beneficiaries are. And it sets out guidance for the trustees as to what they're allowed and not allowed to do. And it's a pretty important document. Good to take a peek at it and see what your roles are. In addition to that document, the legislation in a province may also help to guide the trustees in terms of what powers or rights they have, and can also provide guidance to beneficiaries as to what rights that they have. Now, how are trusts taxed? This is the last thing I want to cover in this foundational episode. Well, a trust is treated as a person for income tax purposes. So it can get a tax number. It might need to file a return and pay tax. It might not. And prior to these new trust reporting rules that just came into play and are effective now, some trusts may never have filed a tax return. So the old way was, if a trust did not have income to report in a particular year, it might not have had to file a tax return or really do anything. Now, all trusts that fall under certain categories have to at least file an information return. So there may not be tax that's owing, but they have to at least file something with CRA. And we'll talk about that in a future episode. So if we break down the taxation of trusts, I just want to divide it between inter vivos trusts that are created in lifetime and testamentary trusts that are created on death. So if we start first with the trusts in lifetime, well, those trusts, they're going to pay tax at the highest marginal tax rate in whatever province of residence that the trust is resident in. And in addition, every 21 years, that trust has a birthday. And it's not really a great birthday, because every 21 years, there is a deemed sale and reacquisition of any property that is in that trust. So if there's going to be a capital gain on any of the property, that's going to come into the income of the trust in that particular year. It's a way to keep avoiding a constant deferral of tax. So typically, we try to do some planning before 21 years, because there's lots of things that we can do to further avoid that tax for a longer period of time. Trustees have the ability to allocate income to beneficiaries or to have income tax within the trust. Types of trusts could be family trusts, alter ego trusts, joint partner trusts, spousal trusts, and we'll talk about some of those in the next episode. Now, testamentary trusts are created within a will, and they're created on death. And those trusts are taxed at the highest marginal rate as well, unless they fall into certain categories. And one of the big categories is if they're considered a qualified disability trust. So if the beneficiary of that trust qualifies for the disability tax credit, that is one of the factors that can lead them to potentially being considered a qualified disability trust and to have an ability to have better marginal tax rates. Similarly, you may hear reference to something called a graduated rate estate. So it is possible for the first 3 years after someone dies for the estate itself to have favorable tax rates for the first 3 years if they fit certain categories. So trusts on death are not really taxed in a positive way unless they're categorized as a qualified disability trust. And that is a huge change from the way things used to be. So up until 2016, trusts that were created in a will had the same marginal tax rates as an individual. So they had the same graduated rates. It was fantastic. We used to use them all the time. And then changes came into how trusts were taxed on death, and now they're taxed at that highest marginal tax rate unless they fit into one of the exceptions. That's the big foundational issues on trusts. Tune into the next episode where I'm going to talk a little bit of some of the more advanced issues in trusts that you may be stumbling across. And then finally, I'll do a third episode where we talk a bit about the new reporting rules and how those are shaking down for this upcoming tax season. Now, please note that the views and thoughts and opinions that are expressed in this podcast episode belong solely to me and are not necessarily the views of my employer, any organization that I'm a part of, or any other group or individual. And in addition, the information provided and discussed in this podcast is not legal advice, and I encourage you to consult with your legal advisor for specific advice.